The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Hey guys, welcome back to Breaking Banks. Today is, what is the date today? April 28th. Yeah, I just had my birthday the other day, so I was actually in Hong Kong with some friends. Quick shout out to Matt Dooley and Maria Sid, who took very good care of me on the Sunday, and Peter Brooks in Hong Kong. Quick shout out to you guys for looking after me on Sunday in Hong Kong. But let's get into the news. First of all, I guess you heard about the big news. Goldman Sachs is starting up a direct-to-consumer digital bank. That's, is it cool? I don't know. But it just shows you that the pure play digital banking arena is heating up. It's not slowing down. I mean, if Goldman Sachs thinks there's money in it, then, there is money to be made in this space. So for those of you that are looking at companies like Simple and Moovin and Adam and Number 26 and others in this space and thinking it all adds up to a hill of beans, then what does Goldman Sachs see that you don't see? Ask yourself that question. Okay, some of the other news, of course, Goldman is not the only one. Deutsche Bank is, there's sniffs of Deutsche Bank creating a digital factory, but also apart from that, looking at potentially a US-based digital bank. And also we heard from both Visa and MasterCard today, they're bringing out a new quick EMV chip standard. We're going to hopefully hear from MasterCard a little bit later in the show on that with a pre-recorded interview we had with those guys earlier in the week. Just a quick update on some of the stuff that's happening in the coming down the pipe in the next few weeks. May 10th and the 11th, don't forget Finovate in San Jose. I will be there. And I'm going to let you guys in on a little secret. May 10th, the evening of the first day of Finovate, it's a Tuesday evening, we are having an exclusive book launch for Augmented, my new book, and we're doing that at the offices of SAP. If you want some information on that, we're going to tweet it out today and send you guys information on the event Eventbrite link, so you can register for that event. If you're in the Bay Area or you're going to be at Finovate, make sure you attend. We will have the book there. Of course, we'll be talking about Moovin, and we can confirm we have a special guest going to be on stage with Moovin. That's Rizwan Kalfan, the Chief Digital Officer for TD Bank. So you don't want to miss that. Moovin and TD have collaborated on the TD MySpend app. It's currently the number one rated, highest rated banking app on the Canadian App Store today. So how's that for fintech and bank collaboration? If you want to check out Finovate, if you're interested in it, then go to spring2016.finovate.com. And if you register, you can use the Breaking Banks 20 discount code to save 20% on that. Of course, following Finovate on May 12th will be Next Bank USA. Check that out at nextbankusa.com. Our good friend JP Nichols will be there. I think Rob Finlay may be there. I'm not sure. I'm hoping he is. Use the code BreakingBanks20 if you'd like a discount for that event also. And don't also forget that in terms of, analytics, thought leaders in Europe and so forth, who would you want to hear from? Chief Digital Data Officers, Barclays, Lloyds, RBS, the Head of Group Customer Data Strategy at HSBC, the CEO of BBVA Data and Analytics, all the Challenger Banks. Well, if you're interested in what's happening in Europe in that space and you're looking at migrating your core banking platform as an example, check out Retail Banking Analytics in Europe in London. London from the 20th to 21st of June. Again, we got a discount code. BKVIP150 is the discount code there for retail banking analytics in Europe. Okay, so let's ask Vivek Nasta from Scout Finance to join us first of all. Vivek, where are you joining us from today?
I'm actually here in New York City, though a little bit farther downtown.
So why didn't you come into the studio?
You know, I was running from some customer meetings, and I still wanted to have some time to to prepare for the call.
You don't need to prepare for us. We're very low-key, relaxed here. So, but it's great for you to join us. So tell us a little bit more about the story of Scout Finance and, you know, the potential. You know, really, let me ask you this question. What problem were you trying to solve when you founded Scout Finance?
The main problem that we were trying to target at Scout is the fact that professional investors have very limited options when they're on the road to look at the stocks that they care about. Often they choose between a free advertising heavy Yahoo Finance type experience, or they get a watered down desktop that's somehow shoved into your small screen on the mobile phone. We thought there was a better way. We thought that we would be the first mobile first option for professional investors.
Mobile first in what way? What was going to be the advantage?
Well, for one, the design is focused on a screen size, the size that you're used to looking at when you're on your phone. It's not trying to shove every single piece of data that, like you might be able to do when you have seven screens. In addition, it's super fast. It's cached. So basically, the phone stores the important data that is important to you that relate to the companies you care about. So when you're in the subway, you're off the grid, you can still read the documents and the data that are important, as opposed to waiting for that constant spinner signal issue that we all go through when we're away from the office.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, in terms of the data and the focus of Scout Finance, you focus specifically on professional graduates, market data. Where's the connection here?
The focus is market data. It's professional grade market data, fundamentals, documents, investor letters, things that a professional equity investor, long, short, would be most interested in and would follow as part of their daily workflow.
Is this a replacement for a Reuters or a Thomson desk?
Maybe one day. Right now, we do not provide everything that a Thomson Reuters terminal has because we're focusing on one use case. You see, Thomson Reuters and Bloomberg and FactSet and CapIQ, they're all really trying to play to a much broader audience, particularly Bloomberg and Thomson. I mean, you're getting pricing information from Zimbabwe. You're getting every single document that you possibly would want on both bonds and equities alike, even if, for example, you're an equities-focused investor. They're shoving a lot of stuff at you. Think of it as like an encyclopedia. We, on the other hand, are more focused. We're focused on that fundamental investor, that individual investor that wants more than just the popcorn articles that you get on typical finance sites, but doesn't necessarily need the $3,000 a month subscription or $2,000 a month streaming package and real-time pricing that you might get from a Bloomberg terminal. So you know, we are very much about the investor, the serious investor.
Are these day traders or are these professional investors working for a trading company?
You know what? It can honestly cut across both. I mean, generally a day trader is focused more on technicals. They're focused on the charts and news flow. And so that's not so much what we'd be good for, right? What we are focused on is the person, whether they're at an institution or on their own managing some monies for a family office. We're focused on the individual that actually does research on a stock, that doesn't trade just based on charts or headlines, but actually is looking at the K's and the Q's, looking at the fundamentals, getting a quick snapshot of that company when they're on the go, maybe meeting management at a conference, on their commute, and even, by the way, in the office when they're at, let's say, an investment committee meeting. So it tends not to be the day trader. It tends to be the small money manager, the small hedge fund manager, family office professional, and an individual investor that might have their own PA but doesn't have all the luxuries of the 10 screens and the unlimited subscriptions that some of the larger banking institutions do.
Okay, so, I mean, a typical trader might be looking at, as you say, 10 screens or, you know, 7 different displays. How do you get all that information and compress it down onto a mobile app?
Well, see, now that's the thing. That's the thing, Brett. We don't. So what we do is we pick our bets. We pick our focus on the individual that doesn't need to have the kinds of trading-like pricing, you know, the super fast exchanges for, that are, you know, far flung across the world, every piece of data they possibly could consume. We do not focus on that individual. It turns out there are many more individuals that are being overserved by that use case. They're not trading like a Wall Street hedge fund manager. They're actually more focused on fundamentals. And so by focusing on what a fundamental investor cares about, and that could be a big institution or a small institution, like we said, we end up taking a lot of the garbage, a lot of the overhead out of the app and focus on an experience that's actually digestible in an iPad or an iPhone. That's the trick. It's knowing who we're trying to focus on. It's not the trader. It's not the banker necessarily. It's actually someone who is focused on a certain type of research, equity research.
Okay, so thinking then about presenting this information on the iPad or on a smartphone, there's got to be an element of curation to this. Do you do that through machine learning, or you have a team that does that curation? How do you get the source data?
That's a great question. So yes, we have actually all of the above, believe it or not. So we have machine learning algorithms that tag the most relevant stories from the best sources that we've at least tried to cull to your stocks. So you enter your stocks in a watch list, common concept, but then it's the magic that happens later that's so interesting. Our algorithms pick news stories for you that are from well-known sources, not the bots or the popcorn sources that you typically see on most of these Wall Street sites, and it puts it front and center for you. We also pipe in SEC filings. We pipe in high-quality transcripts of the calls, as well as our own audio. And what we do is, based on your behavior as a user, based on what you are patterned to look at, for example, you may always look at Apple and, you know, and certain documents of Apple before a call, we serve that up to you first. And in fact, we even store it for you in the background so that if you are without a connection and don't want to carry a briefcase of printouts with you, you have the ability to read these documents that you're patterned to looking at. So we really use, we use user profiling. We select relevance from content, particularly news stories. We take a huge swath of documents, summarize the ones that you are most likely to review, and provide them in your app, in an activity feed in the app, right before the call that you're interested in. In fact, we even push alerts to you that say, hey, your company just reported or your company released a supplemental presentation that normally would be buried under some weird section of an IR website. You're now getting that push right to you because the product knows the preferences of its user.
Very interesting. So when did you guys start Scout Finance? What, you know, how long have you been running?
You know, we've been running for a while now. We've been running since mid-2014. And I got to tell you, this is...
Are you guys self-funded? Are you self-funded or
no.
Have you raised cash?
No, it's actually an interesting story. We're funded. Some of our founders put in some initial seed money and then we ended up going out and getting the likes of a Jeff Parker, who is an ex-head of Thomson and did some amazing things at CCBN. We got Peter Kellner and ended up also getting a fund called Green Visor, which is a new early stage fund that's out there.
So can you say how much you've raised today?
Sure. Or is that not public? We've raised about $3 million. Yeah, absolutely. We've raised about $3 million to date, and it's taken a chunk of that, to be honest, to build this product.
Of course, yeah.
You might know. Yeah.
I definitely know. And you know what? You spend more money as you get older in the cycle, and as you get more of a product, it costs you more to keep adding on. But Vivek, let's have a quick break, and then after the break, I want to talk to you about the robo-advising space and what you think is ahead in 2016 in fintech more generally. Can you stick around for a little while?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, great. So, guys, you're listening to Breaking Banks. We're going to have a quick break, and we'll be back with Vivek Nasta from Scout Finance talking robo-advisors and what's happening in the fintech space in New York. Hey guys, it's Brett King from Breaking Banks. If you've ever listened to my podcast and enjoyed it, you'll know I focus a lot on the future. When you look at artificial intelligence, robotics, self-driving cars, smart infrastructure, smart cities, health tech, gene editing, computers everywhere that are smart, this is going to have major impact in the way we live our life and the way society interacts. That's the subject of my new book, Augmented, Life in the Smart Lane, which comes out in the first week of May. Ramez Nam, the Philip K. Dick award-winning author of Nexus, said, "You need to read this awesome roadmap of the future that Brett King has created." Please go and check out Augmented, Life in the Smart Lane, available on Amazon for order today.
Consult Hyperion is a boutique payments consultancy based in New York and London, which helps clients deal with the rapid changes happening in the payment space. We deal with EMV optimization, helping issuers, acquirers, and merchants deliver value from their EMV investments. We help with the technical challenges involved in the digital transformation of payments through tokenization and mobile devices, and with the business cases behind the development of future payment technologies such as the blockchain and instant payments. Come and find out more at www.chyp.com.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. Thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest and charges statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. Thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here. And it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Moovin is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Moovin today.
listening to Breaking Banks featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Hey guys, welcome back to Breaking Banks. I am your host, Brett King. We were talking before the break with Vivek Nasta from Scout Finance, and we are going to be talking to Kamal all the way from Kenya in a moment, talking about Kraft Silicon. But before that, Vivek, what do you think about the whole fintech space? Do you think, there were some rumors in Q4 that things were leveling off a bit in terms of investment, but do you think 2016 is going to be a big year for us?
You know what I do? I mean, I'm in the hunt, right? So I'm always seeing things, and I still see a ton of activity, particularly around the tried and true payments. But even as represented by Scout, you know, there's increasingly pressure on the industry to innovate. And it's now not just about payments. It's about everything from wealth management to diligence to compliance. And there's just so much pain in the finance industry that fintech, as an enabler of that industry, sees no signs of slowing down from my perspective.
Okay, so what about robo-advisors in that space? What do you think, as an investor, are you bullish on that?
You know what? I think robo-advisors, frankly, have been around in some capacity for quite some time. I mean, you know, there were portfolio attribution tools 15 years ago that were used. Now what's happening is you're getting a much more scaled, customer-friendly version of robo-advising. And so, yes, I do think that it's not just here to stay, but it's reached a certain tipping point that is accessible to everybody, as opposed to, you know, you being a programmer or a techie person back in the day. So I think just from a user perspective, a user friendliness perspective, you have seen the prevalence of robo-advisors, and you're going to keep seeing that, particularly, frankly, as mobile becomes a great way for people to engage with their portfolios. It's just a natural thing that if you're on a device, whether it's a computer, an iPad, or an iPhone, you are going to leverage technology, and robo-advisors is just one additional step in that continuum. I will say, though, there's some serious issues with robo-advising that sometimes, you know, are oversimplified. A person and their goals is a complex system. And as good as robo-advising is, it's not necessarily going to get at your major motivation factor and your risk level. So while it's very mathematically great for a robo-advisor to tell you to have this percentage of fixed income or X percentage of equities, it's not getting at the underlying risk tolerance that you might have, and no number is going to relay that. So I think there's still a lot of ways for robo-advising to improve, but as a Uber-like, easy-to-use, quick shortcut on a mobile phone, for example, or a terminal, a desktop, it's definitely come of age.
Okay, so how do people find out about Scout Finance, and what are your plans for the rest of the year?
Well, they can go to our website, scoutfin.com, or go to the App Store, iOS App Store, and download for their Scout Finance, two words, for their iPad and iPhone. Our plans are really exciting for the coming year because, you know, what we're seeing is some incredible engagement from our users. A lot of people, as I said before, are extremely frustrated with this chasm between these cheap video game-like finance apps on the one side and then these fat terminals on the other. So we're really solving a need. What we're hearing, though, from the customers is they don't just want it on their phone. They love the fact that we started with the phone, but they want to be linked to us even when they're in their office. And that's actually really exciting to hear, because what it does is it sets up a disruptive vector whereby we could potentially, not right away, but over time, compete for some of the real estate that Thomson and Bloomberg have been hoarding for such a long time. So we are going to be expanding our reach. Still say mobile in terms of our DNA, in terms of our speed and design principles, but really try to take the essence of that experience and provide you a way, wherever you may be, to get the information you care about on the equities that you follow.
Fair enough. What about funding? When's your next funding round, do you think?
Well, yesterday. The funny thing about fintech is that it is the most expensive sector I have ever been involved in. I was in mobile phones and enterprise software, and I got into enterprise software in mobile, and my God, this is the most expensive business you could ever. So I always need money. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to earn the right to ask for it, because what you don't want to do is you want to go out and get the first check from anyone that tries to give it to you, because one, they'll take a big piece, and you have no leverage. So what I want to do is I want to make my own money, and by the way, this app will charge. It's right now in a, quote, trial mode, so everyone should download it while they can. But we're going to start charging for it on the App Store. And the
what are you going to charge for it on the App Store?
This is super exciting. $30 to $40 a month.
Wow.
And you might say, yeah, it is wow, and I'll tell you why it's wow. Bloomberg.
But there's other stuff that works. I have this app called ForeFlight because I'm a pilot, and I pay a subscription that's probably equivalent to that for all my Jepsen charts and maps and stuff. So if it's a technical app, I think you can do it on that basis. But hey, Vivek, listen, it was great to have you join the show today, but I think we're going to have to move on because we've got Kamal waiting from Kenya, and we've also got an interview from Sam Moore that we're going to play. So thanks for joining us on Breaking Banks today.
Thank you so much.
No problem. So listen, you guys know Sam Moore. He's been on the show plenty of times. Sam recorded an interview for us on the FinTech 5 earlier this week, and we're going to roll that right now. Over to you, Matt.
Thank you, Brett. Welcome back to the FinTech 5. This is our continuing series for Breaking Banks. I speak with FinTech founders, innovators, and all around interesting people in the space. Put them on the clock. We spend 5 minutes. Today's guest is Ivan, and you notice I didn't say his surname, and he's going to say it for me, with InvestHK, right?
It's Ivan Chung with an EU as opposed to the typical UNG.
We spent 30 seconds trying to get it right, and I just went right past it. All right, so you ready?
Absolutely.
Ivan? All right. Can you tell me what the focus of InvestHK is?
InvestHK is a Hong Kong government department responsible for foreign direct investment. We promote Hong Kong as a place for companies to do business. We are a global department, so we're based in 28 cities around the world, attracting investment to Hong Kong for people to do business there.
So which part of the government does it tie to? Is it
very much actually we fall underneath the Commerce and Economic Development Bureau. So underneath our purview, we actually assist companies in terms of their planning, their setup, and the launch of the company in Hong Kong. And if they're already there, we obviously assist them with their expansion plans. So we have identify what opportunities that we could assist them as a government department. All of our services are free. So as a government, we obviously want to encourage the success of our companies, especially before they decide to come, help them with risk mitigation.
You know, London, New York, Silicon Valley will all argue they're the biggest fintech hubs in the world. What's the fintech scene like in Hong Kong?
Very much. I think it's still very much in its growing stage. However, we're seeing a lot of fintech, when we look back at it, there's probably something 50 of the top 100 fintech companies operating in Hong Kong. But more so in the last, probably since 2008, we're seeing more traction for more innovative services that obviously assist in customer experiences. And we're just trying to find a way to lead the market for the Asia region. So London is, we probably identify as one of the leaders, but we feel that Hong Kong has all of the ingredients there to really lead the region.
So really about the closest region-wise would be what, Singapore?
Singapore would be comparable. Of course, everyone thinks about the S's, you know, Singapore, Shanghai, Shenzhen. Those are generally the ones that people refer to, but we feel that Hong Kong has a unique position globally. Obviously, you have the additional benefits of the rule of law and also being part of China.
Yeah, I was going to say that every bank that operates in Asia is going to be in Hong Kong.
Absolutely, actually. It's probably the third largest capital market center in the world. It's all based in Hong Kong. The services are there, making it one of the premier destinations in Asia.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it right there. You just summed that up. How often do you go there? Because you're based here.
I'm based actually in Toronto. Right. I'm based on the East Coast, but my colleague and I, we obviously focus all of Canada. So we will operate on a pull basis working with the Canadian government, but we really do focus on B2B services. So we want to be able to talk to companies directly, assist them exactly in how we can aid them with their business model. Because again, it's not just Hong Kong they're focusing on, they're focusing on the Asia region.
And how did you come to work with the group in the first place? Because you're from
I'm actually from Toronto, but majority of my links are obviously based in Hong Kong. But from those links, they obviously go into China. So I operate from one of the medium-sized, my family was operating in the medium-sized international trade business. So I had regular ties with China, Japan, Korea, Taiwan, and obviously Southeast Asia. And as it continues the markets to grow, we saw ourselves doing business in India, Bangladesh, Pakistan. But the roots have grown probably the last 25 years from Hong Kong.
So looking at Hong Kong in particular, what do you think are the key growth areas? What's unique?
What's unique about Hong Kong? Yeah. The best thing about Hong Kong is it really isn't limited other than to simply say we have our key pillar industries, which are obviously financial services, trade and logistics hub, tourism, hospitality. Those are obviously our key pillars, but we have built a plan as the government to support other industries as well, which of course is clean technology, innovation, health. So we're really trying to focus on trying to adopt more industries to come to Hong Kong to do business there, because again, we believe that best companies should actually come there to operate throughout the region, because again, it's a great place to do business.
So we're down to about the last minutes. This is the rapid fire section. Don't get nervous. All right. So again, first thing that pops into your head.
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Okay.
You ready?
All right.
All right. What city is the fintech capital of the world?
I would say at this time, London.
You're a good man. So you didn't go there. All right. So on a scale of 1 to 10, I know who your employer is. 10 being awesome sauce. Okay. Where does Hong Kong rank?
Awesome sauce.
Awesome sauce. Awesome sauce. Look at that. He's smart. You are Canadian, so I'm going to ask this. Hockey, football, baseball, or basketball?
Oh, baseball and basketball. I grew up with them.
All
the hockey fans out there in Canada.
So now I'm going to let you redeem yourself. Okay. Best Canadian export?
Best Canadian export? Oh, my goodness. resources.
Ryan Reynolds. Man, come on, dude. You're not going to do these.
We're talking cultural, definitely. How can anyone compete
Deadpool.
With Ryan?
What are the three hottest areas in fintech today?
I would say regulatory. I think that's definitely one thing. Number two, customer experience services, working with the institutions. And the third, I will leave it to the imagination of those listeners to see what they can do in Hong Kong.
So where can we find out more about your work at Invest HK?
Please visit us on our global website, www.investhk.gov.hk. One of our services is obviously to support startups. So you can visit us at www.startmeup.hk. We have our venture forum. We just had Elon Musk participate there. So look forward to 2017, see what we can bring into the show.
Excellent. Thank you, Ivan, for your time. And Brett, back over to you.
Hey, thanks for that, Sam. So really international show today, New York, Hong Kong, and we're about to go to Kenya. The interesting thing is I was meeting with his boss in Invest HK, Ivan's boss in Hong Kong on Friday, Charles, and having a very interesting conversation. They really do want to get something going in the fintech space, so we'll see how that goes. The Fintech 5, we are going to be hosting those on some of the shows, but also you can check out the Fintech 5 regularly on breakingbanks.com. Some of our outtakes and other interviews will be on the website. So right now we'd like to introduce Kamal Budabati. Is that right, Kamal? Did I get your surname right?
Yeah, you're almost right.
Do you want to give me your? You tell me the pronunciation so I can get it
okay,
right.
Okay, so it should be Budabati.
Buddhabati. Okay, good. Yes. So I didn't put the right emphasis on it. Now you are you have been called, which is this is incredible honor, but you've been called the Bill Gates of Kenya. Now you know, tell people about why you're the Bill Gates of Kenya, and tell us about Kraft Silicon, the company you founded there.
Okay, I'm not very sure why they call me that or why they once told me that, but what we do is we provide financial software solutions all across Africa. We are one of the largest software producers based out in Nairobi, Kenya, providing software to all across Africa, mostly into the fintech space. So our customers include customers like banks, microfinances, electronic payment providers, mobile operators. And I guess it worked out very well for us. Yeah, possibly that's why they gave me that name once.
So, you know, tell us, what is how big is Kraft Silicon now in terms of your market size, customers, and, you know, your footprint?
Okay, we serve customers all across Africa and some parts of Asia. So about 40, 45 countries is where we provide our software. Most of these countries are emerging countries, and the company is about 300 people company. In terms of valuation, I'm not too sure on the exact, but it would be in the range of about 100 to 150 million US.
And in terms of the size of your customer base across those 45 countries, have you got a rough number?
Yeah, it would be about 200 customers.
Okay, so these include what, banks and financial services businesses, telecoms?
Yes, mostly banks, microfinances, telecommunication companies, and any payment service providers.
So you've talked about the Uber of banking as a strategy in terms of your business strategy as well. So what's the Uber of banking mean to to Kraft Silicon?
Okay, so what's happening, especially starting from Nairobi, Kenya, and now moving all across Africa, is banking is getting outside the banking branches. Banking is also going beyond just credit cards, because in Kenya or most of the parts in Africa, credit card penetration has been very low. And then it just jumped in directly from the bank accounts in the banking branch to the bank accounts on your mobile phone. So everything that happens now in most of the retail mass market space in many of these African countries is a mobile phone that becomes your bank account. So anyone who has a mobile phone actually literally is walking with a bank in his pocket. He does everything on the phone. He applies for a loan, gets it disbursed, get evaluated, do the credit reference checks. Everything that he does it on the phone. So that's why I believe, that's how it's going in the countries where we operate.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's great. So listen, Kamal, stick around. We're going to have a quick break and then we'll come back. I'd like to find out a little bit more about, what's inspired you in terms of your reach, trying to get reach to the Kenyans there and, your education program, computer education program and so forth. So let's have a quick break and you can stick around for a few minutes.
Sure.
Okay, great. All right, so you're listening to Breaking Banks. Follow the exchange on breakingbanks.com, on Voice America Radio, or participate via the hashtag Breaking Banks if you want to converse with us on Twitter. We'll be right back after this break. Hey guys, it's Brett King from Breaking Banks. If you've ever listened to my podcast and enjoyed it, you'll know I focus a lot on the future. When you look at artificial intelligence, robotics, self-driving cars, smart infrastructure, smart cities, health tech, gene editing, computers everywhere that are smart, this is going to have major impact in the way we live our life and the way society interacts. That's the subject of my new book, Augmented, Life in the Smart Lane, which comes out in the first week of May. Ramez Nam, the Philip K. Dick award-winning author of Nexus, said, "You need to read this awesome roadmap of the future that Brett King has created." Please go and check out Augmented, Life in the Smart Lane, available on Amazon for order today.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest, and charge a statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. Thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here, and it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Moovin is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Moovin today.
Consult Hyperion is a boutique payments consultancy based in New York and London, which helps clients deal with the rapid changes happening in the payment space. We deal with EMV optimization, helping issuers, acquirers, and merchants deliver value from their EMV investments. We help with the technical challenges involved in the digital transformation of payments through tokenization and mobile devices, and with the business cases behind the development of future payment technologies such as the blockchain and instant payments. Come and find out more at www.chyp.com.
You're listening to Breaking Banks featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Hey guys, I don't know whether you heard the ad during the break, but if you haven't as yet had the opportunity to check out Augmented, my new book, Augmented Life in the Smart Lane, please do. You can, our website's augmentedbook.com. The book's doing really well. We've been number one in robotics, number one in biotechnology and mechanical engineering for new releases on Amazon in both the US and the UK, and in the UK, number one artificial intelligence new release as well. So this is definitely not a banking book. We'll have some more on that a bit later, but let me know what you guys think about it. The books will ship on May 10th, and don't forget, if you're in San Jose, we have the launch party May 10th in Palo Alto, actually, for the new book. Okay, back to Kamal. Kamal Budabati is the founder of Craft Silicon. He's based in Nairobi, Kenya, and of course, this is one of the hottest places on the planet for financial inclusion via the mobile phone. So let me ask you, Kamal, how did you start Craft Silicon? What was the idea behind the business?
Okay, there was no real idea. I think I was straight from my college. I got an opportunity to do some business with one of the local banks. And the bank was looking for some software to run their clearing operation, that where you clear the checks. And I got an opportunity to work with this bank, which allowed me to then make a product, which was then implemented by various other banks in the country. So there was no specific reason or plan to do it. It just all happened.
And so who was your first customer that you worked with?
There was a bank called ABC Bank, African Banking Corporation. It's a small bank in Kenya. They wanted some software, which I was able to deliver.
So what did you specifically deliver for them?
The starting point was something to do with the clearing of the checks. At that point, the check scanning system was coming into the country, where you don't present a physical check, but you scan the check and take it for the clearing house. The bank was looking for such a system with a couple of other providers. The cost was being one of the factors why they considered me. So they gave me an opportunity to write a product that allows them to scan the check and then send it to the clearing house.
How big is your team now at Craft Silicon?
We are about 300 people company.
Wow.
200 of them based in Nairobi, Kenya, while about 100 plus based out in Bangalore in India.
Okay, great. So now you've also started an initiative through Craft Silicon for free computer education. Tell me about that.
So what we do is at some point we started Craft Silicon Foundation as a way to giving back to the society. And we wanted to be innovative. Craft Silicon has always been an innovative company, and we felt the CSR activities for Craft Silicon should also be an innovative project. So we came up with a bus, removed all the seats from the bus, fitted computers inside, fitted solar panels on the top, fitted a small generator at the back of the bus. Now this bus goes and parks itself into the slum areas. Students walk inside and we give them free computer education.
Wow.
It runs a course of...
So how long is the course and how many people have you had attend the course?
The course runs for 2 to 2.5 months. It's a basic computer education course which allows them to get familiar with the computers with general operations. And then we help them, these students, to get jobs among our business partners. Till date, I think we have educated more than 8,000 students.
Wow, 8,000?
Yes, sir.
That's incredible.
Thank you.
That's fantastic. Oh, so have you employed any of those people in Craft itself?
Oh yeah, a couple of them. But what we also do is, you see, we don't just give them the computer education and let them do. We take their CVs, circulate among our business partners, and we take the responsibility to bring them at least to the interview table. I mean, whatever happens after the interview table, that's between them and the other party. But at least we make an effort to bring them on the interview table among our business partners. So this could be our banks, our supermarkets, our mobile operators who use our products. We introduce them to at least get them employed.
So, you know, changing tack again and sort of getting back to fintech, which is the reason for our show here at Breaking Banks, we're seeing mm-hmm. so much innovation happening in Africa and Asia. I mean, we look at M-Pesa in Kenya, we look at Weibo on top of Alipay in China, you know, WeChat and WeBank in China. Why do you think it is that we're seeing so much innovation on mobile in the developing world, but things like Apple Pay are slow to get adoption in the developed world? Is it the lack of infrastructure, or what's really creating the incredible innovations in developing markets?
I think one of the reasons possibly would be the lack of infrastructure. The only way we can communicate in some of these countries is a mobile phone.
Yeah.
Landlines are not there. Walking up to a banking branch is incredibly far, because you would have banking branches 20, 30 kilometers away from where you stay. So to do any banking operations, it's very, very difficult. And in that particular scenario, innovation has to come in place to make people's life easy. And I think we only had mobile. We didn't have cars, we didn't have ATMs. I mean, they were there, but not to that extent. So
and
we had...
Sorry, go ahead.
So we had to just jump into the mobile, no, without a choice.
So... Mobile's obviously pretty hot. What about smartphones in Kenya? Are they starting to make an impact now, cheaper smartphones?
Well, very much. I mean, today I can get a very Android smartphone at as low as about $20 to $25, which can almost do many of these things that a normal smartphone does. You know, all of them are on WhatsApp and WeChat, Telegram, and Twitter, Facebook, mobile banking. So everything comes in, you know, on that small device.
How quickly do you think we'll get to, say, 50% penetration of smartphones in Kenya?
Not so far. I guess in less than a year or so, we would have more than 50%. Currently, I think we are about 35 to 40%. It's reaching about 35 to 40%.
What's the most popular handsets in Kenya right now?
Lots of them, branded, unbranded ones. Lots of unbranded ones coming up from China and other countries.
Right.
But also, Samsung is doing well here.
What's a typical price of a handset, a basic smartphone in Kenya?
A basic smartphone would go at about $40.
$40 US?
Yes, $40.
What's that in Kenyan? Was it shillings is the currency, right?
Yeah, shillings. It goes about 4,000 shillings.
Okay, so it's similar to rupee price in India. Well, actually a little bit lower, but that's $40. For a smartphone, that sounds pretty affordable.
Very. I mean, very affordable.
Yeah. So, are your solutions and software primarily mobile based? The stuff you're doing for Kraft.
So what we did is when we started Kraft Silicon, mobile penetration was mobiles. I think were just getting introduced when we started Kraft Silicon. So we started our business from an enterprise level, went into the banks, selling co-banking systems, co-microfinance platforms. But as we saw an opportunity coming in a big way into the mobile space, we also started having businesses on the mobile side. So currently, I think the company is divided into 50-50. 50% of our company does into a business into the core enterprise, while the 50% of the business comes in from the mobile, mostly into the mobile and mobile payments.
So, who are the big players in mobile payments in Africa right now?
Wow. Okay. Starting with M-Pesa, I mean, undoubtedly, they are the leaders. They opened up a lot of things for many other companies like us to come and do business because they taught people how to do banking transactions on a mobile phone. So that really helped us. So M-Pesa.
We had the M-Shwari guys on a while back, and that story is a great story because they sit on top of M-Pesa. They've got 12 million customers. They've raised $2.2 billion in deposits in 3 years.
Yes.
It really shows you what access to the traditionally unbanked can be like on a phone.
And it's such a Brad, it's such a market. I mean, very, very interesting market. In a span of about 2 years, we close to have about 9 million customers. We process over 4.5 billion US passing through our platform. And the growth is so amazing. And it's not just in Kenya. I think you take a country in Africa and most of them are following the same pattern that what Kenya did couple of years back.
Definitely. It's a good model. Not every mobile payments initiative has been successful as M-Pesa, of course, but I want to change tack a little bit, Kamal. Mm-hmm. I hear that you are learning to fly.
I want to learn how to fly. It has always been my ambition and hobby, but never been able to do that. Always been very busy. So now this time I just want to
make it. So now you're taking the time out to learn. Have you started actually flying?
Not in the airplane still. I'm still on theory.
You're still doing the theory stuff.
Yes.
So do you know what training aircraft you'll be on when you start? Is it a Cessna 152, 172? Or
It would be 152.
A 152, nice utility aircraft. Great aircraft to learn in. It's a very agile aircraft, but it's a very light aircraft as well. So I did my first solo in a Cessna 152.
Wow, how was the experience?
Yeah, there's nothing like it. When I talk to people and I say that I will remember that for my entire life as long as I live, that first moment when and it was because you're doing all these circuits with your trainer all this time going round and round practicing this and they put you through all these drills, engine failures and so forth. So by the time you get to doing the first solo, you're actually pretty competent. But what happened for me, we pull up and he says, I pull around on the taxi way and he says, I want you to go around yourself now. And I'm like, oh yeah, this is it, this is cool. And when I went to take off, I took off. I didn't, I wasn't even thinking about it. It was a little bit lighter, and then I came around in the circuit. And as I looked down to check the strip was clear, that's when I realized I was on my own. And that feeling was just amazing.
Awesome.
So listen, just before we finish up, I did want to, and I want to hear about how you go with your flying. But tell me about the new Uber type initiative that you're launching with taxis or vehicles in Kenya.
You see, what we realize, in Kenya, everyone is a banking agent. So if you walk into a shop, he's a banking agent. You walk into five steps ahead, get into the supermarket, he's a banking agent. But the taxis are not a banking agent. Once I get into a taxi and he's taking me from here to somewhere else, which takes me half an hour, can I do my banking business when I'm in a taxi? So we want to combine, and we are at a very advanced stage where we are combining the taxi business, a taxi app that combines with the financial services. So a taxi driver actually becomes your banking agent.
So what is it, a correspondent banking partnership? The taxi driver is an agent for a bank?
Yeah, he's an agent for a bank. And he does some transactions. He can sell you airtime. He can pay your bills. He can become an M-Pesa agent and also do some cash transactions. While the taxi driver, he also becomes a bank customer.
That's pretty wild. And what does he have to go through specific training, or does he carry a special app on his phone? How does that work?
Yeah, he carries a special phone that's also a taxi booking app, plus a banking app together in one.
And what's the name of this business going to be called, Kamal?
We are going to call it Little.
Little? Oh, that's a pretty cool name. Cool. Well, that's great. So where can people find out about Craft Silicon if they're not in the 45 countries you're in? Where can we find out about your business?
Just go to internet and look for craftsilicon.com, and it will be there.
Great. Fantastic. Yes. Well, thanks for joining us all the way from Nairobi today. What time is it in Nairobi?
It's getting to 11. Now, 11 at night.
It's late. Well, thank you for staying up and joining us from the other side of the world.
Pleasure was all mine, Brad King.
So that was Kamal Budabati, the Bill Gates of Kenya, who runs Craft Silicon, talking about the amazing opportunities in Asia and Africa around the mobile inclusion space. And it's always good to hear that's going great guns. And that is it for Breaking Banks this week. Thanks for joining us. Don't forget, next week we have Vitalik Buterin from Ethereum, and back on the show, Ben Milne from Dwella. So make sure you join us next week. It's going to be huge, as some politicians would say. That's it, guys. See you again next week. Bye.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, for more of the latest in fintech news.